88.3 Southern FM.
I was chatting with someone the other day, and yes, exciting news. Australia has an experiment aboard the International Space Station. I, of course, knew that this was coming up because last year at the Melbourne Final Frontier Festival, Sebastian Chou from the Cube Rider Company in Sydney gave a talk titled Training the Youth to Aim for the Stars. And here's his talk at Melbourne University.
The part of that mission is to inspire millions of students to participate in STEM, again, which is science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And so what we're trying to do is sort of big and grand, and, you know, granted, you might question two university students trying to build a company to do this, but we do have a great team around us, and we've basically started by creating the Create for Space program. And we've worked with the New South Wales Board of Studies, we've worked with a variety of teachers from across the country to build a program that enables high school students to participate in something that was once thought to be inaccessible. The Create for Space program is a one-semester program that can be taught in any high school across Australia and in the world. And what happens is students start to learn core STEM skills by participating. We give every school that participates in the program a Create for Space kit. And the students and teachers then work together over 9 modules across a semester to actually build their own space experiments. Now, we originally targeted students in years 9 and 10 to participate in this program. And the reason is because at that age and at that time in the students' lives, they're the most susceptible to be influenced by getting themselves into STEM. So what happens is year 11 and 12, you start to choose those subjects that might not be STEM subjects. They might be arts, they might be law, they might be history, and they're all great. But what we want to do is get them into science and technology. And that's why one of the big mantras of Cube Rider is to be as engaging as possible for students. Because I do not want a company, and I do not want teachers to be up here, like me actually, I really don't want this, to basically be up here talking at people. I want students working with teachers to create really engaging, memorable moments that will stick with them forever. And that's one of the big drivers for Create for Space. The other thing is that you probably already know, across the world, in all OECD countries, there is a decline in the rate of enrollments with STEM participation, students going to universities, into things beyond that as well. And we feel that this is unacceptable, especially since the fact that you've got a huge increase in demand for jobs that require STEM fields as well. So you've basically got this thing where you've got the rate of enrollment going down, and you've got this massive spike of jobs needing to be filled by scientists, technologists, engineers, and mathematicians going up. And that just doesn't make sense. And in order for us to be, any nation, to be prosperous, you need to have students and people going into STEM disciplines in the future. So we've got about 1,000 students participating in over 50 schools across the country in our Create for Space program at the moment. They include schools in Queensland, they include schools in New South Wales, and they also include schools in Victoria and in Melbourne here as well. And sort of the three big things that we try and teach students in the program, and that teachers try and teach students in the program, are about coding, are about the science and the physics of space, and the mathematics of data analysis and statistics. And we try and wrap that, again, in a really fun and engaging way, because, again, that's how we feel we'll be able to get the most students participating. So each school that signs up for the Create for Space program receives their own space curriculum. It's full of teaching and learning materials that help students and teachers work towards that ultimate goal of actually sending something into space. Now, what we try and do is assume that everyone that walks into that class has zero coding knowledge, which means that we can try and get the most amount of students engaged in this, in space and technology. And the way we do that is really by having that zero coding knowledge means that we can actually get a whole bunch more students involved. And as people and as students and teachers progress through the curriculum, they start to learn different skills. So some of the skills, like I mentioned before, aren't just coding, math and science. They're also things like the history of space, the history of the industry, how Australia as a nation relates to that as well. They're all important things in the much broader context that students and teachers and basically people that aren't involved in the space industry don't really understand. I mean, for instance, not many people actually know that Germany was the first country to actually launch something to space with the V2 rocket. That's what we found out as we were researching this stuff, and I bet a whole bunch of students in high school don't know that, but we feel it's really important for people to know. Now, the other part of the Create for Space program involves us working deeply with the schools in order for them to maximize the outcomes and maximize sort of the joy and the great memories that they take from it. So that's actually a picture of my co-founder, Solange Kuna, working with one of the schools in Sydney who was having some trouble. And what we try and do is really help teachers facilitate learning for the students. And this is just one example of many sort of professional development days or Skype sessions that we've had in order to help students overcome some of the problems they have in the Create for Space program. Because what we're really trying to do is condense really complex topics and ideas to make it easy for people who have never touched this stuff to understand and start playing with it. It's kind of like Arduino for space, almost. Because, you know, before, when you had really, really complex electronics that no one really understood, Arduino, Raspberry Pi came along, all those sort of things came along, and then it became really easy for people to access. And that's sort of what we're doing with space now. So the thing that ties the entire program altogether, the space mission, the curriculum, us working with schools, is the Sagan board. Now, the Sagan board is a cool little piece of technology that we've developed. It's powered by what's called a Raspberry Pi, which is similar to an Arduino. Again, basically that whole idea of simplifying electronics. And the Sagan board essentially is a data logger that's been designed to survive in space and designed to NASA specifications. So the Sagan board is the thing that we're going to be launching to the International Space Station to actually run student experiments. And at the same time, each class or each school that participates in our program gets at least one Sagan board, an identical copy of some satellite hardware to actually run and use in classrooms to better understand what's happening. And that's, again, part of the engagement factor here, because we now have really cool satellite hardware that little kids get to play with. And that's just really awesome, I think. So you've got this board, and 90% of the learning that happens with the Create for Space program happens around this board. I mean, you've got coding that happens obviously with the Raspberry Pi, then you have the data that you get from it, which really helps you understand the world around you, and then you have the mathematics and the data analysis that you do afterwards in some of the later modules in our program. And so, this, like I said before, the Sagan board really ties together the whole idea of everything. It really makes things tangible for students and really makes things easy to understand, because now you've got something that is cool looking, you've got something that goes to space, and you've got something that you can touch, and you've got something that you can do experiments with, not just in space, but in the classroom and around your home as well. So towards the end of the program, towards the end of the journey, you know, because students start off with not knowing much, and then towards the end, they actually have to start realizing that they're doing a space mission. They're actually starting to code things. They're actually starting to realize that this is all for a purpose. And that purpose is to develop an experiment around the Sagan board in order to run on the International Space Station. So what we do towards the end of the program is really try and teach students about design methodologies, sort of engineering practice, try and get them involved with teamwork as well, because there are some students that aren't as good at the coding and might be better at the science, and then that might be the opposite as well. So you've really got the sort of scientists, engineers that break off into groups, and they start doing their own thing. So the students that actually start figuring out what kind of hypotheses they want to test in space, whether it be, you know, can I find the gravitational constant using, I don't know, gravitational constant, gravitational acceleration using the accelerometer we have on board, or what does the magnetic field like look like, sorry, when we're in space, or what does the barometer read when inside the ISS, because actually no one knows the temperature of the ISS. I tried Googling that the other day, and it says shirt sleeve. But these are the kind of questions little kids and students as well and older students start asking themselves and start asking the rest of their team. So Now, we're getting towards the end of the program here. We're starting to really nut down what experiment we want to send to the International Space Station. We're really starting to figure out what kind of parameters and what kind of variables we have to deal with. And this is when students actually stop doing broad strokes in their code, stop just gathering data for the sake of gathering data, but really trying to define what they actually want to do and set out these sort of parameters. And again, they do it in Python because Raspberry Pi, it's really easy to use Python. Python's a lovely coding language for beginner students as well. And once they've actually got that software experiment that they want to run, they start testing it on Earth. They might put it on a balloon. We've got a few students that have done that. They might put it in a freezer. They might put it in different extreme environments just to see what happens. And then that ultimately it actually gets sent to space as well. So now the program ends and the students send us their software experiments. We then install them onto our payload that we are launching to the International Space Station. Our payload can support up to 3,000 individual software experiments over the course of a 1 month mission. And then we launch it to space. And we're launching on a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket from Cape Canaveral this year. And the payload, along with hundreds, if not thousands, of student experiments, will then be integrated to the International Space Station by an astronaut, and it will automatically start running the software that the students have created. Once the experiments have been run in space, then the data will get stored on the ISS and beamed down to the Earth and redistributed by CubeWriter to all the schools that have participated in the program. Now, there are so many awesome things that we found that students love and find really memorable about the program. I mean, we've got students who are literally jigging class just to make sure that they can come to the CubeWriter class that another teacher is running. We've got students, it's a quote from students before, they said, give me hardware and an API and I can do anything. And this is like a kid in year 10. Their students really become inspired when they realize that, you know, the sky's not the limit for them because they're literally going beyond that now. And the other thing is, teachers actually become reinvigorated to start teaching in the classrooms again, which is something powerful that we didn't realize until just recently. We found out that teachers before, you know, some teachers, not all teachers, but some teachers, you know, sort of didn't really, they weren't really passionate about teaching anymore. But then once they got their hands on a CubeWriter Create for Space kit, they actually realized how fun it could be because they're doing something awesome, something cool that none of the other teachers are doing, you know? And that's something really awesome for us as well, when we can actually reinvigorate the whole profession of teaching with this. So the things that are coming up for us, the big things for CubeWriter, are the fact that all the schools, the 50 schools that I mentioned before, they have their experiments due. They have to submit all their code to us by September, end of September, so we can test it for a November launch on the SpaceX Falcon 9, like I said before. And then the experiment results will be beamed down by the end of November, just in time for school holidays, so you get a really, really awesome send-off for that year. And currently, students are really busy trying to figure out what experiments they want to run. They're not really sure. They're like, oh, maybe I should do this, maybe I should do that. You know, CubeWriter, can you help us? We need to figure out this or that. And then we go ask the partners that we're working with, hey, can this work? Can this not work? You know, tell us the feasibility about this on the ISS. So it's all really sort of just a learning thing for all of us at the moment. And the awesome thing is that we've got new schools joining every day. We really like that because we want to grow the program, obviously. We're starting to get schools overseas as well. We're starting to get schools from really remote parts of Australia. There's really no limit to who's actually participating in the program. We've got really, really rich, affluent schools participating in Sydney, and then we've got really low SES schools, and they're all sort of getting the same thing, democratized access to space. And for a lot of you, that might sound like a really lame thing and really cliched that, you know, the people that are in the space industry, but it's true. We're giving kids democratized access to space. Whether you're rich or poor, you work for NASA or not, you can now do something, even though it's small, in space. So thank you very much for listening to my presentation. I really appreciate it. And if you guys know any schools or if you'd like to help out in any way, please let me know. Thank you.
And we have more from Sebastian Choi from CubeWriter in Sydney after this little interview I did with an American teacher who is in charge or was in charge of flying experiments on the space shuttle and the space station. And we talked about the advantages of flying these student experiments on the space station over the space shuttle.
So again, they're very interested in what we were able to accomplish last summer and use that as a model to adapt to the space station.
Well, the space station would offer more opportunity, wouldn't it? Because shuttle missions are only up to a week or so, and obviously they're very busy, whereas in the space station they're likely to have more time to interact with children, aren't they?
Well, and when the other thing about the space station is that once it got up there, you'd know what was happening, when was happening. The shuttle missions for us were very taxing at times. In fact, we had the slogan, when you're given lemons, make lemonade. And we were going to fly in April, and we didn't fly until June. So each time we thought we were flying, we'd get the kids ready and get them scheduled to work in the control room, you know, let their parents know what was happening. And then the space shuttle would get delayed, and we'd have to unravel everything that we were doing and then start back up. So it was taxing at best. I finally had thought I had chosen a time to vacation beyond the shuttle experience, and finally I decided just go on vacation and maybe the shuttle would leave, and it did. And I flew from Santa Fe, New Mexico to the Cape in order to catch the shuttle liftoff.
Well, thanks for joining us tonight on the Space Show.
Well, you're very welcome. Thanks for asking us about our project, and I hope that I really do hope Australian kids will have a chance to send something aboard the shuttle. In fact, if we ever get to fly again, we'll make sure that some students do send their experiments. That would be fun.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
So the CubeWriter thing is an advance on those days of the space shuttle. Now let's go back to Sebastian and CubeWriter in Sydney and see what they're doing.
Any questions?
So do you actually select which experiments can be run and which are, like you mentioned that you've been looking at the feasibility of some experiments. Do you actually have a plan as to what sort of types of experiments you're targeting or something, or can you absolutely anything that you want to do?
It can be absolutely anything that fits into the parameters of the physical hardware that we have. So if they want to, right now we've got a camera on the Sagan, but it's not pointing out towards the vacuum of space or towards a window or something like that. So we can't physically take pictures in space. Instead, we've got a different kind of picture setup where objects collide in zero gravity, so kids can monitor that. So there are certain limitations we have, and there are certain things we can't do because this is our very first mission. It's actually a first for Australia as well. We're the first company, apart from Optus, to be approved to fly anything into space. And because of that, it's sort of like a very... it's a very new thing, and that means we're starting off small. So there are a few limitations in terms of what experiments students can do, but what we found is that some of them are really creative. Like, we don't have a Geiger counter, for instance, on our board, but students have tried to make a Geiger counter using software and the CMOS sensor on our camera. They've actually developed some really nifty software to work around that. So it all really depends on how creative the students get as well on that end too. But there are certain things that we have to look at and basically certain requirements that we have to adhere to as well, because we are launching with NASA and, you know, a whole bunch of other organizations as well. So we can't just sort of go crazy with the type of experiments we can run. No, not initially, no. But that's something that we are looking at doing in the future, seeing what kind of experiments people want to be running and seeing what things could really benefit the most students, and we'll be going from there. Yes? Yes, actually, we have. So we get lots of inquiries through our website, and just a few days ago, we've actually had a few homeschool parents starting to contact us saying, you know, we've seen you in the news, or we've seen you there or here, and now there is starting to be sort of like a little bit of interest with homeschoolers, and we'd absolutely, do you know any homeschoolers?
Yes.
We should talk then, because we'd love to have some homeschools as well in our program. Yes?
Oh, I was wondering, how did Cube Writing get started?
Yeah, no, sure. So, Solange and myself are the founders of CubeWriter. We both used to intern at a space company in Sydney called Sabre Astronautics. Some of you may have heard of it before. And I got bitten by the entrepreneurship bug really early in my university degree. And what's happened is I really, really wanted to start something in space. And so I came to Solange one day and I said, hey, do you want to send satellites to space? And she was like, yeah, absolutely. How are we going to do it? And I said, well, I've got an idea. And it was basically a ride-sharing concept. So basically, as many different experiments, as many different payloads you could fit onto one vessel as possible, and then launch that to space to basically reduce the cost for everyone. And we thought that was a really great idea until we realized how much it's going to cost, until we realized the sort of technical challenges involved. And then we sort of pivoted because we realized that education, something we're both very passionate about, but is also something that's a lot easier to do in Australia as well, because there aren't many customers in Australia that would want to pay, you know, $50,000 to send a piece of hardware to space on a satellite, for instance. And so that's why we sort of pivoted into this. But basically, it started because two people were really passionate about space and we really wanted to kickstart an industry and no one else was doing it. So we're like, well, screw you guys, we're going to do it. But yeah. Any other questions, guys? Yeah?
What type of, what sensors do you have on the segment?
Okay. So they're all commercial off-the-shelf sensors, right? That was one of the reasons why we got so quickly approved to fly into space by the company that we're working with, which is actually Nanoracks. So Nanoracks is a subsidiary company of NASA, kind of. And what happens is they basically help facilitate launches. They give us access to the International Space Station and so forth. And we basically worked with them to decide what kind of sensors would be feasible for a quick first launch. And we decided on an IMU, which is basically an accelerometer, gyroscope, and magnetometer. We have a barometer on there, which does temperature, pressure, and humidity. We also have a UV detector. We have an infrared sensor. We have two other temperature... We've really got lots of temperature sensors. We've got two other temperature sensors on board. We've got a real-time clock, and that should be all of it, I think. And a camera as well. Sorry, a camera. And we've got a few LEDs as well. So with all of that combined, students are really trying to figure out what kinds of experiments they could do in those parameters. Yeah. Any other questions, guys? Yes? So it's not strictly high school. Like I said in the beginning, we aim to target students in years 9 and 10 because we do realize that there is a pivotal point in those students' lives where they go and choose what they want to do. But with that being said, we've had school students knocking on the teachers' doors actually wanting to, and they're in year 7, for instance, and they really, really want to do space stuff. So they work with a whole bunch of different students from years 12 to 7 to actually do it. And we've also had some interest from primary schools as well. What year are you in, man?
5.
Okay. So yeah, we've had some interest from primary schools as well. And it really depends on the school and whether they want to run it or not in their school. But maybe talk to your teacher. Any other questions? Oh, yeah. So that's a good question. With Nanoracks, the company I mentioned beforehand, we don't actually have to do much hardening. There's a bit of circuit protection on the actual device itself, but because our mission is only a one-month mission, we're using commercial off-the-shelf components, we didn't really see the cost benefit to actually do some hardening for something that's going to be inside the ISS as well. So that's, we really have sort of like a trade-off with that. But perhaps with future missions, depending on how long they are and if they're outside the ISS or if they're outside a manned capsule, then that might be a different story. But we have been looking, when we first started CubeWriter and we were thinking of doing, so going down a different path, we were looking at different hardened instruments and stuff like that, and we just found that they cost a lot of money. Yeah. Any other questions? Yes?
Is there that much more involved in sending something outside the ISS? Like, is it more complicated in any way, or is it more...
Yeah. So basically, if you want to send something outside the ISS, it does become a lot more complex. So it's not just a matter of finding some commercial off-the-shelf like electronic components and matching them all together anymore. It becomes a much more difficult engineering challenge, not only to protect your hardware and software, but also to get approval from the Australian government, which is a big deal as well, and also getting approval from NASA to fly. And if you want infrastructure that is semi-permanent, so greater than 6 months on the International Space Station, then there becomes an even more rigorous amount of testing that you actually have to do. And as a startup, we're just not prepared to do that yet because we're still very early stage. But that is something that we're looking on in the future as well. I suggest contacting companies like Nanorax and other people that launch to really give you a better idea of what it takes to actually go and fly something outside and have it sitting in space for a very, very long time, if that's your aim. CubeSats are different as well because you can actually buy a lot of components from stores that have flight heritage, which just basically means they've flown into space before. And it really depends on what your mission is as well.
So what happens to the experiments here?
So
this, I know this is like a Soyuz back and like pull off Soyuz, whatever the capsule is.
Yeah.
Just burns up in the atmosphere. Is that what happens at all?
So, good question, actually, because Nanorax has joked with us that astronauts just toss it out the airlock. I'm not sure how serious they are with that. Now that you mention it, it's probably like an actual spacecraft that burns up, but it'd be pretty cool if it was just like out of the airlock or something. I would have probably put a radio on it to see if it could pick up something as it was going through space. You can pay extra to bring it back on a Dragon capsule. Because the SpaceX Dragon capsules actually do have re-entry capability. And that, again, as a start, this is out of our price range, but that is something we're looking at doing in the future. For most Nanorax payloads, they do pretty much just get burnt up in space on re-entry. They don't really bother about having any sort of return capabilities unless you specifically request it. In that case, it costs a bit more. But yeah. Any other questions, guys? Yes?
Yeah, and do you put any limitations on the design, like a power budget or maximum pilot size or number of
users of the code you run? Absolutely. So right now, we've been conservative and we've basically given every school 15 minutes to run an experiment in space. They get a 5 megabyte size budget, but we're still negotiating that with Nanorax, and they do have a maximum power budget as well, because our power budget from the ISS is only 2 watt power draw, so that does inhibit things. The ISS also has maximum downlink as well and uplink capabilities, so you can't exceed that, otherwise it'll just be too inconceivable to actually send any data down. I mean, if one school ended up having like a 5 gigabyte file that they want to send down, we couldn't do it. You know, the International Space Station couldn't cope with that. So that's something we also have to look at, and there are a lot of parameters that students and schools have to adhere to before we can actually send it up to space as well. But that's something that they learn in the curriculum as well, and something that they sort of negotiate and talk with us about.
So I think that would be really important to learning.
Yeah, exactly. It actually is very... Yeah. Any other questions, guys? Oh, yeah.
So it'll actually be a vacuum, or is it just...
No, so this one's going to be inside the International Space Station. So the next one we're doing, we're hoping to get outside in the vacuum of space. So that'll be basically outside sitting in the Japanese module. I think it's called the Kibo module. And that'll be basically sitting there. But right now, this one is sort of very much sort of like a first test run, kind of like a prototype. Yeah. But thank you guys for listening to my talk. I really appreciate it. And have a great time. Enjoy Final Frontier Festival. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
Speaking at the Melbourne Final Frontier Festival at Melbourne University, that was Sebastian Chow Uai, and he's from CubeRider in Sydney. Just a reminder of the space show. We've got a website. It's www.space.asn.au, www.space.asn.au, to know more about the space show.